actors and others involved can testify to the complexities of it and how difficult it is to do that in a very short period of time. Secondly, we're not able to determine at this moment, as far as I can tell, what the fiscal impact of creating of that commission would be, and that may be a very significant fiscal impact, which means, of course, it has to pass muster with the finance committees and fit into an overall spending plan, which I think this legislative session is going to be very difficult to do. Third, I won't speak for any groups, but I was sitting in front of one of the processor representatives a little while ago and heard some deep mumblings, which means that I think there may be some difficulty with the legislation from their perspective. So what was a very strongly supported, and I think even Department of Commerce may have some concerns about moving this quickly on a commission. I'll let them speak for themselves. But my conversations with the commissioner yesterday indicated there were deep concerns about that. So what was a piece of legislation that had unanimous support and could move forward in a first step to put us in a position of working with the congressional delegation during the interim, or working with the various fishing groups, processors, the administration during the interim to put together a very workable commission, all of a sudden comes a piece of legislation that's got opposition, a high fiscal cost, doomed to failure, and instead of having a first step in place, we have no steps in place. And that's why I think it's important to hear from those individuals before a final decision is made on adopting a committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, thank you.
With that, I would withdraw the motion, and let's hear from him. I don't have a problem. I had no idea
we leave the motion
had made that many changes.
With objection at this point, we'll have a hearing on the motion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Forbes, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Would you Mr. Uttermall is present. I'm not sure which of you would like to do it, but George, you did the drafting here, didn't you?
Yes, I did, sir.
Why don't you set up the mic and walk us through what you have done?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is George Uttermole, Legislative Counsel with the Legislative Affairs Agency. The draft committee substitute you have before you, version K for Senate Bill 306. The first two sections of the bill contain the entire text of Senate Bill 306 as introduced. The changes to the committee substitute are contained in Section 3 of the bill. As a result of the last meeting, I was given instructions to create a mechanism by which the state could qualify certain agreements reached between fishermen and fish processors for the antitrust exemption under federal law. The intent was to qualify them for the exemption known as the state action exemption, which is a judicially created exemption under federal law. In order to qualify for that exemption, a state has to articulate a clear and affirmative statement that the state intends to replace competition with regulation. And the second aspect of that is that the state has to actively supervise the activities of the private sector. To satisfy the requirement for active supervision, the state must, one, provide an adequate authority for some body or agency to conduct that supervision, and then that agency would have to go forward and actually perform the supervision. The mere availability of authority to do it is not enough under federal antitrust law. The agency itself must actually go forward and perform the supervision. In order to achieve that...
Can you elaborate a bit on that, George, for just a moment? It's not enough to have it in place, but the agency itself must perform that function?
Yes, the agency must actually, maybe perhaps I can get to that as I go through the bill.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Section 3, the first section is the policy statement, which is intended to be the clear and affirmative statement that the state intends to replace free competition with state regulation. As we'll see as we go through the bill, this bill gives the authority for the state to regulate in only two narrow areas, that being contracts reached between fishermen and groups of processors. Currently, processors as a group are not allowed to negotiate with fishermen. Each processor has to negotiate individually with fishermen rather than as a group. The second exemption we're seeking is allowing fishermen and processors, either an individual processor or groups of processors, to get together and agree on the minimum price that the processors will accept for their manufactured product. This is necessary because allowing the fishermen and processors to agree on this kind of thing amounts to essentially a vertical price restraint, and for which we'll need some form of antitrust exemption.
You know, explain that now a bit. If we can allow under step one the fishermen and the processors to sit down and come up with a price.
Yes.
But to make that legal and to prevent vertical price fixing, so to speak, we then have to also require that the commissioner set or have something to do with the minimum price that the fish processor's product will sell for?
Right. The goal of the bill was to allow fishermen and processors to agree on two things. One, the price between themselves, and then the price which the processor would ask for his product from his market, his wholesale.
Why would the fishermen care? Once they've got their price, what do they care what the processor sells it for?
Evidently, it's something that arose during the study of the monopoly, the antitrust study of the fishing industry in Bristol Bay, where there was a need for the domestic processors to have some ability to group together and use their combined bargaining power against the agencies, the people that buy from them. And this would allow the fishermen and those processors to put up a combined front against the primarily international marketing agencies that purchase from them.
But is that an optional thing within this legislation, or is this something that would be required to meet federal price fixing?
The mechanism we set in the bill is required to qualify for the state antitrust exemption. However, under the structure of this bill, the agreements are permissive in that we don't compel the fishermen to negotiate with processors, and we don't compel the fishermen and processors to agree on a price that the processors will charge. That portion of the bill is permissive. And if they come together and reach that agreement, then they must go through this process and be supervised by the Commissioner of Labor.
So there doesn't have to be any contract, any agreement. They can individually buy all the fish they want, sell all the fish they want, and they don't have to deal with anybody.
That's right. A fisherman and a processor on a one-to-one basis can enter into all the agreements they want.
So if they want an antitrust exemption, then they have to submit what they come up to the state.
That's right.
And there's no lesser way to get an antitrust exemption?
I don't know if it's a lesser way. There's an alternative way, and that's for congressional action to grant an exemption, similar to what's in Section 2 of the bill.
Go ahead,
George. Okay. Under Section 3 of the bill, 615, sets out the powers and duties of the commissioner in regard to fish price agreements. It allows him to review the agreements and actively supervise the conduct of the parties under the agreement and require fair prices and investigate the agreements if necessary. And in something that's been found to be important in some of the federal cases reviewing active supervision by the states is whether or not the agency performing the supervision has authority to go out and study the economic situation of the industry in which it's regulating. And so the commissioner is given that duty.
So there's nothing on this list. It's also not required to meet the federal guidelines to get the exemption?
Yes, Senator. The entire goal of Section 3 is to satisfy those requirements, and it's the approach taken in the bill is the most cost-effective for the state and least intrusive from the state's perspective and hopefully from the processor's and fishermen's perspective in order to qualify for the exemption.
I mean, you couldn't just take the list of 1 through 6 and say number 6 only is in the best interest of the state, for example?
You'd have to give the commissioner sufficient authority to actually go in and supervise, make some decisions about the agreements, approve, disapprove, compel the parties to come forward and provide additional information to justify the agreement. That kinds of things is what the federal courts are looking for under term under the under active supervision requirement.
This is a feel worse than the disease.
And under the section, subsection B of 615, it gives some discretionary powers to the commissioner to investigate agreements, suspend or revoke agreements if they're contrary to the best interest of the state or the parties, if the parties begin acting outside the terms of the agreement or acting contrary to the purpose of the agreement. Also, the commissioner is given additional authority to prescribe the manner of accounts and require parties to submit information. This is all part of his investigation and supervisory functions that I feel are necessary to satisfy the active supervision requirement. Under 620, it sets out the two situations, and only two situations, where the commissioner of labor would be involved, where commercial fishermen. And when I mean commercial fishermen, I mean not only the individual fishermen, but associations of fishermen may work with a group of fish processors. That's required because the fish processors don't have an exemption like the fishermen do to form associations.
But Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
So what this is saying is that not only can the fishermen come together to tell the processors what their minimum price to be paid is, but also the processors can agree to a minimum price that they will sell the fish for?
Yes, that's the second item to which the parties can agree to.
Okay.
And then in subsection C of 620 is just a clear statement of the existing situation that commercial fishermen and individual processors are not subject to this process and they may enter any agreements as they wish on a one-to-one basis.
If they're not a member of a collective?
If the processors are not a member of a collective. Not a member of a collective and are not representing the collective. They can be a member of a collective, but they cannot be bargaining on behalf of the collective. They have to be bargaining for themselves. And then section 625 sets out the procedures for approval of fish price agreements. Trying to make this as speedy as possible, but on the other hand, not making it so short that the commissioner has actually no opportunity for real review of the agreement. There's a date of 15 days in which the commissioner must approve or disapprove the agreement. So that it provides for a negative option in the sense that if the commissioner does not approve the agreement within 15 days, does not disapprove the agreement within 15 days, it takes effect, subject to the authority of the commissioner at some later date to determine if the agreement is improper or not being carried out properly. And also, if the commissioner rather would like to study the issue a little while longer rather than having it take effect by default, he can provide for an interim approval process during which time he can conduct additional studies. The core of this of section 620 is subsection C on page 4, beginning on line 6, which sets out the conditions that the commissioner must find in order to approve the agreement. Basically, he must find it consistent with the purposes of this act, is a fair and was achieved through reasoned negotiations between the parties, is a valid contract that's enforceable between the parties, and provides an equitable return to the parties, is an otherwise lawful agreement, perhaps to make sure that the agreement does not include some kind of provisions that might violate antitrust, such as some kind of vertical restraint or restraint on competition not provided for under this act, and then the determination that the agreement is in the best interest of the state. And the remainder of that section, for the most part, are largely various procedures that the commission would follow. And then in section 630 through 645 of the bill, the commissioner is given authority to adopt regulations necessary to implement the act and to hold hearings and establish procedures for hearings. To the extent that someone could violate this, these provisions, there's a penalty provided. That penalty is the same as for violations of the existing state antitrust laws. And then the remainder of Section 3 is definitions of relevant terms.
George, what happens today if a group of fishermen organize a strike, as an example, and hold themselves out for a specific price with a group of processors? Are they in violation of antitrust laws, state and federal?
When we start getting into details like that, I'd certainly like to pass the buck to Jim Forbes.
Oh, well, he's online.
He's experienced in this area.
Jim, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did you hear the question that I asked?
Yes, I did.
What's your response?
Yes, I believe that the answer to that is that those fishermen are very definitely exempt under federal law, but it's less clear that they're completely exempt under state law. The way that the state law exemption is written right now is it allows the fishermen to get together for the purpose of marketing their product, but it doesn't necessarily give them the absolute right to get together for the purpose of establishing a price. That language has never been tested in court. I frankly don't know what a state court judge would say. Back in 1991, when the fishermen organization did go on strike, we never really believed that the situation presented facts that we could take to court because we thought it was illegal. So it just didn't happen, but it's not entirely clear under the existing law that the fishermen are exempt under state law. Now, the bill that's proposed by Senator Duncan here, section one of the draft is in front of you, and I believe that's the same as section one of the original draft that was submitted. That came to state law to make it very clear that those fishermen are exempt under state law. It brings it into line with the federal exemption. So that, at a very minimum, that section should be passed in order to clarify that the fishermen have antitrust exemptions when they try to collectively negotiate like that.
Okay. But the fishermen, too, collectively negotiate, have to have someone with whom they can negotiate. They have to have somebody seated across the table from them. Let's now talk about the processor. Strike occurs. Fishermen collectively in Alaska join together and decide they are going to set a price and demand that the processor pay it. They may be exempt under federal law today and are probably exempt under state law, but that's untested. What about the processor seated on the other side of the table? Is he exempt from state law or is he exempt from federal law?
Well, as things stand today, as long as there's only one processor on the other side of the table, there's no problem. The problem arises when two or more processors get together in any way, shape, or form. Then you have a problem under both state and federal law as the status quo exists. Under Senator Duncan's original bill, you would get rid of the problem under state law. Yet, as the processors testified before, they would still have the problem under federal law. But I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth here, but it seems to me that the bigger issue is how do the processors get a good price from the people that they sell it to? Because they're out there on the world market, and what we found in our inquiry into the salmon industry, at least in Bristol Bay, those processors don't have any bargaining power at all. The buyers, international buyers, come to them and say, here's what we'll will pay you, take it or leave it. And since the processors can't discuss among themselves what they'll sell their fish for, they're in a weakened position. They don't have any market power or any bargaining strength when it comes to the people they sell it to. So you've got two levels of activity there, one when the processors talk to the fishermen, the other when the processors talk to their customers. And that's where we view the processors as being extremely weak.
Yeah, I think that's probably real news to most of the fishing community, who've always assumed that the processors had a great deal of power and influence over the price at which they sold. In fact, aren't the processors routinely dealing with people who probably have sat down and figured out a price and are exempt from any of our laws because they're Japanese buyers or European buyers or whatever, and there is no law that prevents them from setting and fixing a price that they, as a cartel or a group, or even individually, will offer to American processors?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think in practice that's exactly right. I think that the Japanese do have some antitrust laws on the books, but there's no indication that they're ready to enforce them. And well, it's very difficult to get jurisdiction over them in the United States.
I guess my concern then, and you would know better than any of us based on your study, if we don't take both steps and provide some relief for processors too, we may only have ourselves kind of two blocked, as they'd say in my country. You got a group of people that can organize, but they don't have anybody that can sit across the table from them, number one. And number two, if we don't provide that option for the people sitting across the table, they cannot have any power to negotiate with the international market.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there's probably several different answers to that. One of them is that I think you can tell from listening to Mr. Uderholm talk, this is a very long and difficult process coming up with an antitrust exemption under state law. You've got to create a new level of regulation. You've got to fund it somehow. There is a fiscal impact. By contrast, if the United States Congress were to address this issue, they could provide an antitrust exemption for the processors with language no more complicated than what's in Section 1 of this bill. It'd be a very simple matter for us to do that. Their antitrust exemption would be self-executing. There wouldn't be any bureaucracy to regulate the prices, and there'd be no fiscal impact, particularly to the state. So in balancing the approaches, those are probably factors that should be considered. Another response to what you said would be, well, we haven't taken anything away from the processors by granting them state antitrust immunity, even though we don't grant them federal antitrust immunity. We may not give them everything that in an ideal world they would have, but as Senator Duncan puts it, it's certainly a first step in that direction.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Mr. Forbes. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Little.
So even the latest version of this bill doesn't help us out with the federal issues, obviously. Is that correct?
Okay.
Should I respond to that?
Yes, please. Go right ahead.
The answer to that is that the current version of the bill, in my opinion, doesn't go as far as it needs to go. The biggest problem, I think, I mean, just from my perspective, having looked at the situation, the biggest problem in going the state action route for providing federal antitrust immunity is you've got to accomplish the goal of at least establishing a minimum price that the fish, that Alaskan salmon or other seafood products would command on the international market. One of the realities of the market today is that you've got a number of processors that are owned by a foreign company. In fact, they're owned by the foreign companies that they sell to, the major trading companies that they sell the salmon to. Unless you have a mechanism in place that enforces a minimum price across the board so that not even one processor can sell their product for less than that price, you're going to defeat the purpose, because you'll have a significant percentage of the catch in any of the fisheries in Alaska. A significant percentage of the catch will be going to going from a wholly owned processor to the parent corporation at a price presumably less than the one that's set here. So my response is that Mr. Udemil's done a heroic job here of trying to put something together, but I can't, I mean, you know, the devil's in the details here. I can't imagine how we could work through all the legal and economic analysis that's necessary to make this thing work in the time that's left in this session.
Let me ask a question.
Yeah, Senator Duncan had a question.
Mr. Forbes, may I ask you, do you think it's worthwhile, and let's go back to the original bill that was put in that does that grants the state antitrust exemption, and I believe that's a good first step and then allows us the opportunity to work with our congressional delegation to see if federal language can be adopted to accomplish the entire action, or in if that doesn't happen, at least gives us an opportunity to work with the various interest groups and the administration to put together a well-thought-out agency. Do you think that the first step is worth doing this session? Senate Bill 306 is introduced.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Chairman, I'll just put on my antitrust enforcer's hat, and in the role of antitrust enforcement, the Attorney General is the executive officer for the state, and so I'm a little bit uncomfortable commenting on policy issues. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm supposed to be here to talk about legal issues, but I think that Senator Duncan is absolutely correct that from an antitrust enforcement point of view, it doesn't hurt anybody, I think, to pass the initial bill that was proposed, even though it doesn't confer full federal antitrust immunity. From a legal perspective, I can't see a reason in the world not to take that first step, even though you don't necessarily take the second step at the same time.
I guess the only question that I have is, having done so and assuming, number one, that the feds then exempt from antitrust purposes our fishermen and our processors, and our processors are significant, have significant ownership within them from these foreign elements, how have we gained a thing? And what's to prevent whoever owns ABC Seafood in Japan from now conspiring to set prices through their United States captive company, or their company and their four buddies' companies who may control Bristol Bay or some other area as far as processing capital investment is concerned? What's to prevent them then, once we've exempted them from antitrust, from coming in and offering 5 cents a pound?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the answer to that is that at least the processors that are not owned by those foreign interests would have the market power, the bargaining power to stand up to it. As it is now, they don't have the bargaining power to stand up to that kind of pressure. And in reality, what your question views as the negative outcome of an antitrust immunity actually just describes current events. You know, currently, that's exactly what's happening. The foreign-owned buyers of this product are, we believe, coming in with virtually the same price on a take-it-or-leave-it basis across the board. And the lack of bargaining power by the processors is a fairly recent phenomenon. It's probably only in the last 3 or 4 years that that's been the case. But the fact is, that's exactly the case right now, and we believe, after reviewing the situation, that if the and there are a significant number of domestically owned processors, make no mistake about it, there are quite a few of them, and they account for a large percentage of cash. If they had the power to get together and say, you can't play the divide and conquer game anymore. We're here standing together, telling you that our price is such and such. I think the situation. Theoretically, it could be vastly improved over what it is now.
Okay, but you say passage of Mr. Udemil's draft would not provide any assistance in that regard because there are so many wholly owned or significantly owned foreign processors. I guess I'm confused.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that...
it works. Let me try it again a different way, Jim.
Really short notice, but it seems to me that to make that approach effective, you'd have to have the commissioner establish a minimum price at the processor level. There'd have to be something like that across the board.
Well, I guess the question initially was, can we do anything that will be effective other than just a gesture that will allow people to go on strike and negotiate with one processor at a time? I mean, that's all the initial bill does. Congress, of course, could exempt it, and it's like sending a letter to the chaplain to tell them they should do it. Maybe they'll go along with it. But effectively, assuming Congress does not, this draft by Mr. George Udermull has certainly provided us with a mechanism. But you're saying now the mechanism won't work unless or because of the foreign processor. And I'm trying to understand why that won't work.
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman, what I mean to say there is that that's one of many changes that might have to be made draft that Mr. Udermull came up with. It's obviously a pretty big industry. There are a lot of different facets to it. There are a lot of different fisheries out there. They have different dynamics in them. And I'm just suggesting that one change that I would propose in Mr. Udermull's draft, but I'm talking at the same time that it's one of dozens and dozens or perhaps even hundreds of changes that that various parties would urge on the legislature. That, in other words, really all I'm trying to say there is that Mr. Udermull's draft or this approach in general is just loaded with extra work. There are any number of decisions like the one I'm trying to describe here that have to be examined in finer detail and looked at from an economic and a legal point of view just to make sure that they would work. And what I'm trying to say there is that I'm just not convinced that Mr. Udermull's draft would work. I think it's a great step in that direction. I mean, I certainly applaud his efforts putting this all together just over the weekend, but I think there's just so far to go with this particular approach that I just don't see how the legislature could hope to accomplish it with the time remaining.
So what you're really hoping for is that we pass this and then Congress exempts it and we leave the whole thing wide open for anybody to do whatever they feel like.
Well, the legislature would certainly be free to come in and make adjustments and fine-tune the structure of the market to make it run.
Well, if in fact we've exempted and the feds have exempted it, would we still have a state interest that we could come in and regulate?
In my opinion, Mr. Chairman, you would. It
wouldn't be
any number of steps after those initial steps are taken, including the establishment of a minimum price. Basically, that of course comes from there are any number of states that do that kind of thing for their agricultural products. The leading case, Parker versus Brown, comes from the California raisin industry when the legislature in California decided that the raisin growers needed some protection and they established a board that established minimum prices for California raisins. So this is generally the same approach, but the legislature would always have the discretion to come back and put those kind of fine-tuning mechanisms in place
Okay, so Congress could exempt it and we could still regulate it without violating the Supremacy Clause?
I believe so. I don't believe the issuance of an antitrust exemption would by itself prevent the state from regulating the seafood industry. Certainly the state has jurisdiction over the fishermen, even though they have an antitrust exemption. Has all kinds of labor regulations
and whatnot
that are within its jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Forbes? Any for Mr. Udermull? Thank you, George. Did a wonderful job. Appreciate it. Anyone else that wishes to testify today? Right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Rick Lauber, and I represent Pacific Seafood Processors Association. I guess first I should tender an apology for not being here when this bill was taken up by this committee before. I certainly can't plead ignorance of the legislative system, having been here for part of five decades. But in any case, I did testify on the original bill that was introduced in the previous committee, and indicated that I thought it was a good first step and that we should pursue it. There is some problems with the current restrictions placed on the processors and fishermen in negotiating. But not in my wildest dreams did I feel that we were going to come up with something like this. And I've had some wonderful weekends, but I certainly never had one like Mr. Uttermole had. I realized that my familiarity with the problems of the federal government in order to take advantage of the loophole, so to speak, that they've provided for the states, that there has to be some independent action by the state in order to do that. But let me say that, of course, I have not seen this bill before 30 minutes ago, and this in no way is going to be an in-depth analysis of this from the processor's point of view. I had the opportunity, because of the time in the original bill, to submit this to the antitrust lawyers that work with Pacific Seafood Processors. In fact, follow us around wherever two or three are gathered together. They shall be there, I can guarantee you. They're very cognizant of the problems with antitrust problems. And there are a number of things in here that if we have to do this in order to get the exemption, then I would tell you that the exemption is not worth it. It's an inconvenience now. I think the system would be better if there were some relaxation of the antitrust laws to merely allow two or more processors to negotiate with fishermen in the same room at the same time, obviously not allowing two or more processors to get together on their own before the meeting. That, of course, is something that I don't think anyone would like to exempt. But if some of the reasons that I've heard given for doing these, and I don't want to get into a long projected discussion over marketing and so forth, but I think this committee deserves to at least have the record straight on a couple of things. There's a lot of talk about the control of the market by foreign buyers, and when they say that, they're almost always referring to Japanese buyers, and of the investment and ownership by Japanese companies in the seafood business operating in Alaska. We do have several companies, and I'm primarily talking now about salmon, which is, quite frankly, where the problem area is in this necessity for this type of legislation. I just made some notes thinking about this one. They were talking about the control and domination by the Japanese interests. Well, let me give you the facts. The largest company operating in Alaska is a company by the name of Trident. It is 100% solely owned by Americans. And it also is the largest buyer and processor of salmon in Bristol Bay. The second largest processor in the state of Alaska is a company called Icicle Seafoods. It was originated in Petersburg, Alaska. It is not only 100% owned by Americans, but it's largely owned by Alaskans. Another company that's a large buyer in Bristol Bay is Nelbro Packing Company. Nelbro Packing Company has not a dime of investment by Japanese. It is, quite frankly, a Canadian company. Ward Cove Packing Company is another very large processor and buyer in Bristol Bay. Ward Cove Packing Company is 100% owned by Americans. And Ocean Beauty is another large salmon processor in Alaska, and it likewise is no Japanese ownership in it. And there are many, many, and many others. There are a couple of relatively large companies. I don't know where they'd fit on this list, maybe fourth, fifth, or sixth, that are Japanese ownership. The vast majority of salmon is purchased and processed by companies that are not owned or controlled by Japanese. That is a myth. There was at one time significant numbers of them. They, quite frankly, have had the good sense to get out of the business, which, by the way, a lot of our people wish that they had had. So the Japanese have exited the salmon business. They find it much easier to buy their product from American or other companies. One of the other things that, while I certainly don't have the expertise of the previous witness or some of the others have testified to, but one of the things that always amazes me is they're talking about the Japanese market as some type of a octopus controlled by a central brain that fixes the prices. Well, if they do, they sure as hell don't do a very good job at it, because the same ones that are fixing the prices now, according to some people, were the same idiots that paid and bid the price up to $2.40 or 50 cents a pound in Bristol Bay just a few years ago, and by the way, bid it up so high that many of them went broke. So whatever they're doing doesn't seem to be working very well. Now, I won't say that that we have the market that we would like to have with them, and obviously they're very, very good businessmen, and they're tough to deal with. Japanese, whomever, it doesn't make much difference. The way that works in business is that the buyer wants to buy low and we want to sell high, and we don't always get our way. As far as probably one of the most probably necessary but ridiculous things that I can think of in this bill, that in order to do something like this, where you may or may not have anybody involved in it, that you have to have a minimum selling price for your product. Well, if we were doing this 15 or 20 years ago, it might make some sense, because at that time, Alaska, particularly in the sockeye market, controlled the market. The Alaskan fishermen caught the lion's share of the sockeye salmon in the world, and we marketed and sold it out of Alaska. Today, quite frankly, if we didn't even have a Bristol Bay red salmon season this year, which is going to be a big one, supposedly, if we didn't even have one, it wouldn't have a significant impact on the world price of salmon. Alaska has to come to the realization, which, by the way, all of our experts, the state has hired and everybody else has been involved with, tell us that times have changed. Mr. Chairman, we no longer control the salmon market. Unfortunately, it happens to be dominated now, the deciding factor, by places like Norway and Chile and the Russian market that's having some impact upon us. This is not the time to be coming around with some type of utopian concept to correct what is an irritation. I mean, it certainly can't be so bad as it currently is that it has stymied the industry. I mean, we've been at it for over 100 years, most of the time with these kinds of restrictions on us. However, I do think that if we can find some kind of a fix, and that's why I testified in favor of the original bill, that it was a good first step. We move along gradually. We move into something. If we can get a federal fix, fine. If we can get a combination of a state fix, fine. If we can get a combination of the two, fine. But this is a significant, or could have significant impacts upon this industry at a time when, quite frankly, fishermen and processors don't need a lot of people from government coming around and telling us we're here to help you. If there's one thing, one message we have sent consistently, and it's getting louder and louder and louder in our industry, and by the way, other industries, is some type of regulatory reform. We certainly don't need a lot more regulations in our businesses. Now, I would hope that you would go back to the original bill, and if some minor changes are necessary according to the attorneys, that's fine. Let's see what we can do. Let's work with it for a year or two, If we can't make any progress on the federal level, then let's take another look at it on the state level. But as other witnesses have testified, the attorneys in particular, this bill will take a lot of work. And we don't have the time. We can't afford to make a mistake in this legislation. So I would ask you to set it aside, and let's move ahead with the original bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What do you contemplate the second step would be on the state level? You said a second step on the state level, and that would be fine.
Well, my first choice was I thought we ought to try the federal government and see if we can't get some type of a federal fix.
Right.
And I don't have any objection to us reviewing this type of legislation. But the pressure cooker of the last few weeks of a legislative session, it may be the type of thing that people are going to have to take a look at. I think there are fishermen groups here today that are as surprised by this as I am, and they would probably like to consult with their people and the economists and people that are knowledgeable. I know I would. I haven't discussed this bill with a single processor. Certainly I haven't discussed it with the attorneys. And it's just the type of thing that I think that we ought to, as well-meaning as it might be, I think this is at the wrong time, too much, and without enough work put into it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kate Troll. I currently serve as the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Saners. I also serve on the Executive Committee for United Fishermen of Alaska. And I won't go on as long as record be near as eloquent, but in first blush of looking at the new CS, I too have some of the same reactions and concerns. The intent originally was to relax the atmosphere, to allow us to enter into long-term contract negotiations with our processors. And looking over this, yeah, I feel like we would be doing just the opposite in a way. Instead of relaxing, we would be strangling the price process by bureaucracy. I know my fishermen don't like the idea of having to the first thing that jumped out at me was the policy statement, Section 3, to restrict open competition.
That's what antitrust is all about.
Well,
I mean, if you want to stand up and say we need to be exempted from antitrust, then you say we're a special category of people. We do not have to abide by an open, fair, free market system that is provided for in antitrust. I mean, let's not call it anything other than what it is. If we're going to be a monopolistic system, exempt from the same rules that everybody else in the private enterprise system has to play under, then let's stand up and say that. That's why the policy statement has to be there.
Can't we just sit down and say it?
Sit down and say it, too, if you want. I don't care.
I guess, you know, the way I look at it, in the atmosphere of open competition, we would like relaxation of the antitrust exemptions to enter into, negotiations, where right now we can't even discuss the concept of looking at multi-year contracts. And we don't even have to get into the specifics. We're just talking about, wouldn't it be great from the standpoint of promoting price stability that we entered into multi-year contracts? Processors, could you come to a conference so we can discuss this? And the answer is no, they can't even do that. So it's we're not trying to end run open competition. I mean, open competition is part of our long-term solution. More competition, the better off for fishermen in terms of trying to get better prices. What our objective was is to have some relaxation so that dialogue and communication could occur. So I'm just saying that I know one thing my fishermen have hammered into me is the concept they support, more competition. I think that long-term that's part of it. So if I were to take this to my board, Senator, I'm just trying to judge what their reaction would be. And that would be one of the very first flags.
Agreed.
That would go up.
Too. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. We had a strike, I think it was 1990.
1991.
I remember the rhetoric coming out of that strike, whether it was out of Craig or the meetings in Wrangell or the ones that my colleague, Senator Jackal, was roiled in up on the bay. I remember all the people screaming and yelling that we got to get some federal investigation of these processors under antitrust laws. And they were asking for criminal sanctions. And when Rick tells me that his people, every time they two or three of them get together, even socially, they got to have an attorney around, it's worse than the Open Meetings Act. Because these guys can get thrown in a federal pen for doing it right now. I don't see any exemption in here for the processors. And I don't know how you have a dialogue if all we have is fishermen's organizations better able to talk among themselves, but they can never talk to anybody other than one processor at a time. Two of them can't even come into the room with you, I don't think. How do we overcome that through this? If we don't do something as wild and bizarre as what Mr. Utermole has suggested.
Can we sell indulgences like the gambling boats?
That's what we're attempting to do, only we've apparently got to embroil ourselves in it. We have to show them how to do the stealing or gambling or whatever. Go ahead, Kate.
Oh, yeah, that's fine, Mr. Chairman. I guess my response to that is that's why looking at the original Senate Bill 306, recognizing that to accomplish the objective, we still would need to go to the federal government to get that type of an exemption. And that seems to be the preferred approach as opposed to building a bureaucracy to where, you know, if I had to go through all of this process to get a price agreement for my fishermen, I would never do anything else on behalf of the association. I mean, it seems to be quite cumbersome. So I guess I just want to reiterate that I testified earlier in support of the original Senate Bill 306. If I took this version back to my board, I think I would be sent back, no, this is a strangling of the process as opposed to relaxing of the process, and I don't think I would get their support, Senator. So I'm encouraging you to move forward on the first step, and I know that you recognize that you don't want to mislead fishermen into thinking you've solved our problems for us, because it isn't the total fix. I think those of us who are close enough realize that, and we will be glad to communicate that to all the different fishing associations and the fishermen that this is just the first step. When this was discussed at UFA, it was in that context that it was discussed at. So I don't think we're...
Are we allowing under this, are we sending the message to Congress that we also want the processors exempted, the second step that Mr. Utermole is talking about?
No, in fact, I would encourage you to do a companion resolution to Congress that would send the message.
Well, we have the resolution right here in front of us, so there's no problem doing that. Put it right in this bill.
Well,
in other words, are we, according to what the research was that Mr. Forbes was talking about, and the concerns that Mr. Utermole mentioned, that we're only addressing half the problem if we just address fishermen. And this, these first two provisions, the old bill, talks about exempting persons or fishing industry as fishermen. I mean, it talks constantly about a person who's a fisherman. It doesn't talk about a person or entity who's a processor. Shouldn't we be asking Congress to exempt both groups?
What we're trying to avoid is price fixing. We want to encourage price negotiations, Senator. And I think there would be some concerns about trying to get into price fixing and monopoly if we were looking at the exemptions to allow processors to agree among themselves and set the price and tell fishermen this is what your price is going to be.
So it's okay for fishermen to do that, but it's not okay for processors.
We don't control the price as fishermen. We want to be able to negotiate with our processors on what would be a fair minimum price. Until they sign on the bottom line, you know, there's no agreement, Senator. So, you know, that.
I think I hear what you're saying.
I'm, you know, the initial intent for Senate Bill 306 was to allow for fishermen through and fishing associations to talk to more than one processor at a time about the subject of price. And
but you agree with me that the processor can't meet or talk with you?
Currently they can't under antitrust.
Even if Congress exempted you as fishermen from the antitrust laws and failed to exempt the processors, from what Mr. Forbes has told me and Mr. Udermull has told me, the processors still can't talk to you by having more than one of them in a room.
From what I understood, Senator, that if we were able to gain the federal exemption at the federal level, then they could come and talk to us more than one in one room. If we...
Give me a moment to say something.
No, I don't want to say anything.
Am I misstating that, Rick, as far as your understanding?
Well, I don't know exactly. I don't understand the phase one or phase two idea, but I think Kate has said it correctly. What under no scenario, the state's scenario, this committee substitute proposed what the federal government would do, I guess that they could do, but what they certainly within the realm of possibility that they would do, and I don't know that anyone here in this room would encourage them to go beyond that, is they are never going to allow the processors to sit down and negotiate among themselves before they go into the room and talk with the fishermen. Kate is correct. What this bill would allow under the state law, and if there was an exemption, and it's a relatively minor thing, to merely allow more than one processor to be in the room at the same time when the fishermen are, let's say, for instance, all they're doing, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, all they're doing is the fishermen are making their pitch. Currently, let's say it's in Bristol Bay or wherever, they have to go around and make it to a large number of processors, repeat this performance. They can't bring them all in the same room and make their pitch to them. But I can't see any scenario where the federal government or the state government is going to allow processors to get together and fix prices. I mean, Sherman would roll over in his grave, and not General Sherman, but the Sherman Antitrust Act. I mean, it's just, that's never going to happen.
Understood, but you had expressed a concern to the committee that today, under federal law, you can't get together with them. So shouldn't we be sending the message, get together with the fishermen? So shouldn't we be sending the message that you should be allowed to do so? That goes beyond what this bill is saying.
But, maybe I'm confused. But the second step is if we can get the federal exemption as a result of this bill, then they can get together and talk with the fishermen. And I think passing this bill, Mr. Chairman, sends the message, right? This is what the state wants to do. The state has given the antitrust exemption. Now we will be going to our congressional delegation and saying, hopefully the administration will be, and the fishing organizations and others, and saying, let's have federal action. So I don't know which stronger message you can send than to pass the Senate Bill 306 as originally introduced.
I must be misunderstanding one thing here. George, would you please explain what you meant by your second step and why you felt it was necessary?
Mr. Chairman, now I'm not sure what you mean by second step.
Well, you had a two-step process. You had first on page two of your breakout of your bill, and you're talking about step one. The only price agreements subject to approval are, one, those collective agreements between fishermen and a group of fish processors regarding the price, and two, those collective agreements between fishermen and an individual. You were talking about we had to have a second step in here. In other words, that the processors had to be able to get together because they were weak. The market was concerned. Maybe that was Mr. Forbes that was talking about.
I'm still somewhat confused, but there's two things the bill was trying to do. One was to allow groups of fishermen to talk to groups of processors about the prices that they'll exchange between themselves. And then the second thing they wanted to do to increase the bargaining power of the domestic, or excuse me, not necessarily domestic, but the producers and manufacturers in the state and the fishing industry, was to allow them to get together and put a combined front together to the people they market their product to in the national and international markets.
Set a minimum price.
Yeah. I believe processors can do that now. On international markets. Not on domestic markets, but I think there is a procedure. I thought there was one in place that they can to market their product on international markets. I believe there's an exemption under the antitrust law to allow them to do that now. But I thought at one time there was such an organization put together. I don't know if it's functioning, but...
Mr. Forbes, do you understand what we were just talking about?
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't hear everything that the witness said. There's something about an antitrust exemption for sales on the international market. I'm not familiar with it.
What he was talking about, I think, was that for sales in the international market, that they probably could, as processors, get together and fix a price. Because they wouldn't be violating insurance.
Well, I believe that the antitrust act follows them around the globe. I'm not aware of any specific exemption under U.S. federal law for that.
Okay.
Senator Halper. How about we go back to the original bill?
It was your motion.
Okay. I withdrew the motion on the CS.
No objection.
I thank Mr. Udemal for his weekend's work. And I would move that we pass out whatever the number of this thing is with individual recommendations.
It's number 306. Any objection? No objection. Passed out.
Sure.
We're adjourned.
Hey, good time.
Well, thank you very much. I don't understand what you're trying to do, but
I just wanted to do it meaningfully instead of just send a gesture.
But this is meaningful because
I told you I wouldn't screw it up.
This is meaningful because it does allow them now to go on fishing.
Well,
and it does. I mean, you talk to the fishermen, think it's meaningful.
It is from their perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can take the second step.
Well, that's the question.
You never take a second step
until you take the first step, right?
Yeah, but I wanted to see what the second step was going to look like, and I don't like what I see.
I'm appreciative of your intents and efforts, Mr. Chairman.
At least we got her out of here. We'll hopefully finance.
It doesn't have finance. Right, yeah. Thank you.
I, too, am very appreciative.
We'll do okay. We'll get across.
Keep the time, David.
Robin.
Yeah. And then I'll do.
I just wanted to make sure where we were. I figure that's what this committee's supposed to do.
Right. Okay. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks a lot for putting it all together. That's a good
education. I never see you anymore. As soon as the fire bills, I'm going to get a chance to see you.
Go this morning. Thanks for your help.
Make it.
Okay.